Hey everyone, this is Blake Crash Priddle, and welcome to The Medley. This week we're going to be speaking with a man of many talents, Mr. Paul Nicholas Mason. He is an accomplished author and playwright, and he's also an accomplished actor, making appearances in movies and TV shows like And With an E and Speak Your Mind. And he is also an accomplished educator. Begin by telling us about your very first writing project and the inspiration behind it.
I began as a playwright, and I wrote a number of plays, a couple of which have been published, and several of which have been performed in all sorts of unlikely places. And that goes back to beginning when I was a high school student and running through my 30s. But in my 40s, I decided that I wanted to explore novel writing. And that has, for the most part, captured my creative attention since then.
So you started off as a playwright and then you got into novel writing. Can you tell us a little bit about some of the plays that you've written over the years? Like, what kind of genres have you written in terms of plays?
I played with a number of them. I suppose drama with, at times, supernatural elements. My two published plays, The Discipline Committee and Circles of Grace, both have a supernatural dimension. There is a demonic figure in The Discipline Committee, and there is an angelic figure of a kind who appears right at the end, though not as a deus ex machina, in Circles of Grace. Another play, Sister Camille's Kaleidoscopic Cabaret, which won the Christians in Theatre Arts Playwriting Competition, very much to my surprise. This was an international competition in, I think, 1996. And that play was subsequently staged at Chicago and then given a full-scale production in Livonia, which I think is a suburb of Detroit. Those are the three that come most readily to mind.
So you're originally from England, so I would assume that British theatre is also an influence for your work?
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that. I have read a great deal of theatre, a great many plays. I have seen a fair number, not as many, I think, as I would had I continued to live in England, where the theatre culture is, at least in some places, quite vibrant. But I've gone out of my way to see a good deal here, and for example, to Stratford and the Shaw Festival and to a number of theatres in Toronto.
Yeah, I've been to Stratford-upon-Avon in England, and I got to see Macbeth when I was there. And in London, I got to see a handful of plays, including The Mousetrap. And London does have quite the theater scene, as does all of England. And you're in Canada now, and whereabouts are you living in Canada?
I live in Cobourg, which is a community of about 20,000 people, roughly 90 minutes east of Toronto. My father was originally a schoolteacher in England. Indeed, my mother was a schoolteacher as well. But my father, after coming out of the RAF in the Second War, the Second Great War, completed not only an undergraduate degree, but eventually a master's and a doctorate. And he recognized that he needed to go abroad post. So we went first to what was then called Rhodesia, now, of course, Zimbabwe. My father taught at the University College of Rhodesia in Nyasaland for 5 years. And then when the political climate there became untenable, my father was a sort of classic English liberal, and the government of Ian Smith saw classic liberals as communists, so it seemed expedient to leave. And we moved to British Columbia. My father taught at Simon Fraser University for 3 years, and then accepted a post at Royal Military College in Kingston. That's where he finished his career and where I finished my high school years.
Your most recent project is called Our Graves, which is a novel. What's that piece about?
small correction, Blake, to our graves. It's a police procedural. It's a murder mystery. And the novel begins with the discovery of the body of a 17-year-old male student sprawled across the steps leading to the altar in a chapel of an elite, by which I mean expensive, Canadian private school in Ontario. And the novel then focuses on the investigation that follows, but takes a great deal of its time, a great deal of the novel's texture is given over to an exploration of life in a Canadian private school, a Canadian independent school. And I know something about that because I was a teacher in such a school for over 30 years.
Was it a challenge to find a publisher that would accept your work? And did you contemplate self-publishing at any point?
I did not contemplate self-publishing. I began this process when I was 43, I think, when I submitted for the first time to a publisher. Self-publishing was not then the fairly easy route that it is now. I mean, easy to publish, not necessarily to gain any traction in the marketplace. No, I was lucky, Blake. The first publisher I submitted the manuscript to accepted it, and subsequently published another novel that came out just under 3 years later.
Well, I can tell you that I have added Two Our Graves to my list of books to read, and I look forward to reading that. It sounds like a very interesting story.
I appreciate that.
Is it also true that you've written some screenplays as well?
Yes. My play, The Discipline Committee, was optioned for a feature film, but like... as with most, and I wrote the screenplay for that, but as with the vast majority of options, it eventually died. So that project did not come to fruition.
Of all the novels that you have written, which one would you say is your favorite?
That's a very difficult question to answer. They're so different. The first one I wrote is called Battered Souls. And there's a play on words there. The spelling of the word is S-O-L-E-S, so it's a reference to shoes. But it might just as well be a reference to battered souls of a spiritual kind. And that describes, it takes the reader on a pilgrimage, a small-scale pilgrimage from Peterborough, Ontario, to Lakefield, Ontario, to a church, St. John's Anglican Church, in the basement of which church there is a slightly larger-than-life purple statue of Jesus. It's a comic novel for the most part, with some poignant passages. And I remain, for all that is my first novel, I remain very fond of it because I think it's fair to say that it gives unadulterated pleasure. Those people who have read it have told me that it slides down, if you will, like an oyster. At least if one likes oysters. There isn't any darkness, to switch metaphors. There's no, or very little darkness in that novel. I've had more than a few people tell me that it's a novel that they read for comfort or reread for comfort. And that gives me great pleasure. The second novel, The Red Dress, is a much darker piece of work. It involves a teenager, a callow youth, who is taken up by an older, very worldly, very cosmopolitan couple who adopt him, not formally adopt him, but take him on and nurture him and treat him beautifully, and propose to take him on a tour of Europe at their expense. And then one day he sees them doing something morally reprehensible, and he has enormous difficulty reconciling what he sees them do with the image he's previously had of them, and with his own nascent moral sense. So that's a dark novel, although there is a redemptive light, I think, at the end. I'm sorry, you weren't perhaps expecting me to take you through all of them. I'm going a long way around to answer your question. So let me speed to the conclusion. I honestly don't have one, Blake. I think each of them has its individual strengths, its individual merits. The one that's most on my mind at the moment is, of course, To Our Graves, and I'm proud of it. I hope that many people take the trouble to read it.
I've written a few stories myself, and I'm currently working on my own debut novel. And some of the stories that I wrote, thank you. Some of the stories that I wrote are based on things that actually happened to me. Have you ever written any stories that were based on things that happened to you or somebody else in your life? Because I know a lot of other authors will do just that.
Yes. One has to be careful, though, for legal reasons. And that's also, of course, the case with creating characters. But yes, I mean, the honest answer is that events, at least in some of my novels, are drawn from real life. For example, in To Our Graves, there are a number of sub-stories, if you will, stories which are not part of the plot proper, but which give texture and dimensionality to the world in which the plot unfolds. And I have appropriated some of those stories and some characters very much disguised from real life. When I began writing this novel, I posted on Facebook that I would be very grateful if any of my former students would like to share stories with me, which would help me to understand the student experience of the school where I taught. And to my astonishment, I received scores, literally scores, of anecdotes and reflections, eventually compiled in a document which runs 25,000 words. And I have certainly drawn some of my subplots from some of the things those students told me.
What school was that you taught at? And did you teach them English or literature, or what course did you teach?
I taught English and drama. And Blake, I'm reluctant to name the school, although anyone wanting to do a bit of detective work will find out very easily. And the reason is that I really don't want people to think that the school in the novel is absolutely the school where I taught. The truth is that it's a composite of a number of independent schools. In the course of my career as a private school or independent school teacher, I visited a good many independent schools across the country, and in the process met some very interesting people, some very interesting characters, and observed some very interesting dynamics. So, yes, there are some things in the novel which will resonate particularly with people who attended or taught at the school where I taught, but it isn't that school, and that's the reason why I'd sooner not name it on the air.
Do you have any tips for marketing or promoting books that you could give to indie authors? Because there are some indie authors out there that are struggling to get noticed.
Well, you know something, I'm a writer, with a traditional publisher, and I face exactly the same challenges, I think, as an independent author. And the reason is that smaller Canadian publishers, traditional publishers, put all their resources into actually publishing the novels, and then have very little left over for publicity purposes. So it falls to the author or authors in the stable, as it were, of the small publishers to do the vast majority of their publicity themselves. I don't know if this has always been the case, but it's certainly been the case for as long as I've been writing. I'll tell you what I've done. I've written letters to literary festivals. I've written letters to bookstores and just made them aware of the book. I've volunteered to do readings. I've volunteered to do signings. But it's an uphill battle. It really is. It's not for the faint of heart. And I would say to any aspiring authors, particularly, though not exclusively, indie authors in your audience, that it's certainly not a way to get rich. It's a struggle.
There are a lot of indie authors that struggle to get accepted from publishers that do accept unsolicited material, but as a consequence, they have to self-publish in order to show off their work. Do people that go the self-publishing route, do they stand a better chance of getting published by a traditional publisher?
The honest answer is I don't know. I imagine that if someone self-publishes and has enormous success with a self-publication, he or she might well make that part of a pitch to a traditional publisher. And there are some examples. I'm thinking of, for example, the name of the young lady is not on the tip of my tongue, but there is it Rupi Kaur, the poet from a city outside Toronto? It may be Brampton. I wish I had researched her before we spoke, but I believe that she initially self-published, and I believe that she was subsequently picked up by a traditional publisher and has now sold millions upon millions of copies of her books. And there are other examples. I just don't have their names on the tip of my tongue. But I think it's safe to say that, the woman who wrote the Twilight series, I think, initially published her work self-published her work as fan fiction, but it was subsequently picked up by a traditional publisher, and of course it became a worldwide sales sensation. But these people are the exceptions, I think.
So there's no guarantees, but if you do self-publish your work, you know, there is a possibility that you could get noticed by a traditional publisher and might get offered an opportunity?
Well, on the evidence, I would say there's certainly a possibility.
Are you currently working on any plays or novels as of now?
Yes, I've completed the first draft of a new novel that I've tentatively titled Sackville House. That's to some degree an updating and reimagining of a very famous book, Brideshead Revisited, by the English author Evelyn Waugh. Although I think as it goes into its second draft, and even more when it goes into its third draft, it will probably move further and further away from from that model. But yes, I have that piece of work in hand, and if my health permits, I hope to finish that by Christmas of this year.
Well, I'll have to add that to my reading list as well, and I look forward to reading that and the 2R Graves book and the other pieces that you've written. And Paul, it was really good to have you on the Medley this week. Thank you very much for joining us.
I really appreciate your interest. Thank you, and good luck with your podcast and with your own writing work, Blake.
Thank you. And that was Paul Nicholas Mason. I hope that you enjoyed this week's edition of the Medley, and remember, we're all kinds of different.